What's the difference between the way that devotees chant and the way that non-devotees chant? Because the kirtan has spread all over the world. Very popular. But what's the difference? Raise your head if you want to venture an answer to this question. If you're not careful, I'm just going to point to someone indiscriminately and you'll be in trouble. As fear enters your heart, I'm going to point to you. Yes, I'm going to... Where? Oh, yes. Okay.
Non-devotees seem to glorify themselves.
Well, wait, why are they chanting Hare Krishna if they glorify themselves? They would be chanting their own names if they not didn't glorify themselves. But what's the motive in the chanting?
The powers.
You didn't raise your hand. Okay, raise your hand. Yes.
The power is the difference.
The power.
The power.
Oh, the bhav, yes. But what is the difference in the bhav?
It's the prema. The prema.
Well, in the case of the devotees here, that's certainly the difference. But a little more philosophically, yes.
You want to stand with the mood of the service?
Yes, and it's for the pleasure of the deities. And why do non-devotees chant? Because it makes them happy to chant. You feel good when you chant, which is, it's not that it's not nice to feel good, but that's the difference. Because the devotees, their chanting is a calling out to Krishna to be engaged in service, loving service, not service in the sense of a job, but seva. May you be pleased. Calling out, a sincere calling out of the heart. When Prabhupada would sit there and chant, it was such a calling out of the heart. He chanted Jairada Madhava and the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And it was such a, it was so much bhakti. So you all chant with so much bhakti. So much. But I thought the cowherd boys chanted the best. Now, are you going to be able to sit and listen? Because this class, oh, wait till you hear this. Now, here we'll see how the Pilamuni takes it. Now, this is text 45 and 6, correct?
45.
Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Dravyo Palabdhi stanasya, dravyarekshana yogatayada, tad panchatvam mahamana,
patir
dravyadarshanam. Any of the ladies? Once, it was in 1972 in Japan, Srila Prabhupada was teaching the ninth chapter of the second canto, and he made everyone in the room chant the verse, and more or less, you're expected to memorize it. And then in the second day, he concentrated on the second verse in the chapter, but we also chanted the first verse. And after a few days, Bhagavatam is very powerful. And the more we absorb our consciousness in the Bhagavatam, the less our consciousness will be absorbed in the world of matter, and we'll see the world in which we live in, we'll see that through the eyes of the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, we see the world through the eyes of our minds. And the mind's certainly the mind's tendency, the mind in this world, its tendency is to see the objects of this world as if they are meant for our pleasure, which is illusion. It is Maya, actually. It is not the objects of this world. In the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, it describes that everything in this world is considered the body of Lakshmi Devi. It's all manifest from Lakshmi Devi. We would say that it's manifest from Durga Devi, but the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam says it's manifest from Lakshmi Devi. So who is Lakshmi? Is meant for whose enjoyment? Meant for Narayana's enjoyment, not for my enjoyment. So we tend to get caught by our minds in illusion, guided by ahankara, by false ego. We tend to get caught into seeing the material world as if it was meant for me. So when you have on the earth right now, there's a little less than 7 billion human beings who are all thinking that everything is meant for me, and plus countless other living entities such as mosquitoes and monkeys, and they're all thinking everything is meant for me. They're thinking, a mosquito thinks that your body is meant for him. So he has a different conception of your body than you do, because so therefore when we see the mosquito, or we don't see them until it's too late, but we tend to, I'm not meant for you. Go away. But the problem is that the material energy is relentless in trying to teach us this lesson about what the material world is like. It is not a suitable place for a gentleman. Now, in some senses, this type of a class isn't meant for the children, because the child's mind is... Everyone close your ears now. We're going to tell some secrets. No. They're so sincere. But I see Gurang's going like this, making believe he's closing his ears, but he wants to hear what's being said. Because they have to have a childish, it's natural for a child to have a spirit, to play, etc. So we don't want to interfere with that spirit on one level, because gradually we all learn what life is about. We all learn what life is really about. And this is what the Bhagavatam right now is teaching us, what life is really about. And this chapter, this part of Kapila Muni's teachings is called The Movements of the Living Entities. It's speaking about how the soul comes into a body based on the higher arrangement, not even by our own plans. We're thrown into a particular material body with a particular mother and a particular father, but we are placed there. We are not choosing that. We are placed there by higher powers. No one could say, make the choice what they want to be and where they want to take the birth, but there are higher forces at work. And we're being controlled at every moment, practically speaking, by these higher forces. So this section of the Bhagavatam, Kapila Muni, speaking to his mother, is speaking very, very strongly about the nature of a living entity, a soul, in the material world, within a material body. He's speaking to make a specific point. And we'll talk about that point in a few moments after we read the translation. But here, he's speaking as he has been in the last few verses. I'm going to, because there are two verses, and because it's such an interesting verse, I'm going to not go over the word by words, because it's quite tricky and philosophical, and everyone will mechanically repeat the words and not remember anything. So I'm going to break from the norm just for a moment here, and just go right to the verse, and then we'll read Prabhupada's purport. And you'll have to listen very carefully here. So, and we'll ask you to repeat. I might even ask you after we say it and repeat it, what you remember. So listen very carefully. Okay? When the eyes lose their power to see color or form due to morbid affliction of the optic nerve, the sense of sight becomes deadened. Okay, actually, it's probably better if we take this line by line, because otherwise it could be difficult. What do you remember from that? You can even look. Now, I'm not going to ask the cowherd boys this point. I'm going to ask the adults. What do you remember from that? What do you understand from that? Raise your hand, please. Yes.
Power of sight is limited.
Okay, yes, certainly. But what's specifically being said here? Yes.
When the optic nerve dies, you can't see.
You can't see. So there are three things being talked about. There's the person who's the seer, which is the soul. And then there's the mechanism that is used for seeing, which is the eye. And then there's the object of sight, which is so many different things we can see, so many different things in this world. So there are three things being talked about here. When the eyes lose their power to see color or form due to morbid affliction of the optic nerve. So when there's something really wrong with the eye, then the person, the sense of sight becomes deadened. So the person cannot see. The person, the soul, cannot see. If his eye is, he can't see the objects of this world. Clear? Okay, the next line. The living entity, who is the seer of both the eyes and the sight, loses his power of vision. So the living entity is separate from what is seen and the mechanism for seeing. The eye gives us the facility to see, but we are not the eye. It's the living entity who sees through the eye, and through the eye he sees the things of this world. So that's what's being said. Because an eye cannot see. I mean, don't any of you try this, but if you took your eye out and you put it over there, it wouldn't see. It wouldn't be able to see. Where is the ability to see come from? It's not coming just from the eye. Without the person, who has consciousness, then the eye would be useless for seeing, like a dead man's eye. So three things are being spoken about so far. There's the person, who is you, the soul, who is the real life, and then the mechanism, the yantra, the body, which is used by the soul to interact with the material world. And in this case, the example is given the eyes. So when the eyes don't work, the person can't see anymore. He can't see what? He can't see the things of this world. In the same way, so Kapila Muni is giving, making this exception of objects occurs. So he's the body, in the same way, the eye is being likened to the body. In the same way, when the physical body, the place where perception of objects occurs, is rendered incapable of perceiving, just like the eye incapable of perceiving, the person cannot perceive anything. So when the whole body is incapable of perceiving, that is known as death. When the body no longer functions, cannot perform the functions that it is supposed to perform, that is known as death. No longer perceives, it is known as death. When one begins to view the physical body as one's very self, the entrance into a new physical body, and we perceive that as me, we start using it, we start using the eyes, we start using the hands, we start using the tongue, we start using the ears, and we consider that me begins to view the physical body as oneself, that is called birth. So here a definition of birth and death is being explained by Kapila Muni. Okay, now raise your hand if you could. To say there's three parts of this verse. Okay, one is the example of the eye. Who can explain what that example is? Raise your hand. Such a bad teacher you have. Raise your hand if you can explain the example of the eye. What is the point? Okay, I'll explain it again. The eye, if it doesn't work, the person, the soul, cannot see. For example, close your eyes. Say, make believe that your eye isn't working, so that's like, it's like having your eyes closed. Can you see? But you're still there? Are you sure? Okay. Okay, thank you. What's your name?
Venki.
Venki. So just as the person cannot see if the eye isn't working, if the optic nerve becomes dead, similarly, when the whole body stops working and it cannot perform its function, that is called death. And when the soul is still there, just like the person is still there, like Venki was still there when his eyes were closed, the soul is still there when the body ceases to work, but we call it death. But it's not, it's death for the body in the sense that it no longer works, but it's not death for the person, the soul. This is the point that Kapila Muni is making. And what is called birth again? Who remembers what birth is? Yes.
When you regain those senses.
When you go into a... Did you remember this? How nice. You listen so carefully. Thank you. Is when the soul enters a new body and he begins to identify and use that body and identifies it as me. That is called birth. Okay. Now, I'm going to read it, and you please repeat. When the eyes lose their power to see,
when the eyes lose their power to see,
color or form,
due to morbid affliction,
of the optic nerve, the sense of sight becomes deadened,
the living entity,
who is the seer of both the eyes and the sight, loses his power of vision. So again, there are three things being described: the eye, what is seen, and the seer.
In the same way, when the physical body, the place where perception of objects occurs, so the body is where perception of the outside world occurs, when is rendered incapable of perceiving, that is known as death. When one begins to view the physical body as one's very self, that is called birth. So there's a means, a methodology by which the soul, ourselves, who is spiritual, who is eternal, interacts with the external world. And that is the material body and its senses. And when the body stops functioning properly, then the interaction of the soul with the material world doesn't work. So therefore, he needs a new body. So that we call that death. And when he enters a new body and begins to use it and identify himself as that body, that is called birth. So, okay, we'll read through the Prabhupada's purport. But it's probably better that I read it slowly like this one, line by line. Otherwise, it can be quite difficult to enter into it, especially just by hearing. When one says, please listen, but I'm going to ask you a question. You ready? When one says, I see, that means he sees with his eyes or with his spectacles. He sees with the instrument of sight. Clear? You see with the instrument. If the instrument of sight is broken or becomes diseased or incapable of acting, then he, as the seer, also ceases to act. In other words, the seer, the person, can no longer see when the eyes aren't working, and he can no longer, if his hands are no longer working, he ceases to act through his hands. Similarly, in this material body at the present moment, the living soul is acting. And when the material body, due to its incapability to function, ceases, he also ceases to perform his reactionary activities. He can't act in the material world. And the conditioned soul, the materialistic consciousness, does not allow him to act in the spiritual world, so he's caught. He can't interact in the material world, and he has no capacity to act in the spiritual world. So what does Prabhupada mean when he says he also ceases to perform his reactionary activities? What does that mean? Yes?
Activities that result in a reaction.
Caused and result. Caused by previous karma. See, let's look around. Everyone from on this side of the room and this side of the room, and the young ones, the old ones, we all are different. Taking birth in different families, different countries, different parts of the world, and our lives were different. We have different intelligences. We have different characteristics of our body. This is all karma. What's another explanation for it? What would be another explanation for it?
Krishna lies behind the action of karma.
Yes, of course. I'm talking about what the materialistic viewpoint on it. Chance. Okay. Something so orderly happens by chance.
Different combinations of the three modes of material nature.
Yeah, that's quite a Bhagavad Gita oriented answer. That's very good. But materialistic people who don't have, what I mean to say, people who don't have the knowledge that the Bhagavad Gita teaches us, have a very difficult time understanding why things are the way they are. And because of that, even religious people have a very hard time understanding why the circumstances of one individual is completely different from another. So they will say chance, but where do we see anything working by chance in this world? Although someone could say the traffic in Pune or Bombay works by chance. Because obviously no one's in control. But how orderly existence is. And they could say we're individual, you know, the differences are by chance. But look at just the simple movement of the body. We can ask, where's our physiotherapist over here? How many muscles would it take to do this? Balancing? So one muscle goes like this, and when you move, extend that muscle. There's muscles on this side pulling it back for you to go down and things like that. How many muscles would it take to do this, to work together? 10 different muscles. How about to blink your eyes, which happened automatically?
10, 12.
Huh? He said about 10, and you said 12. Okay, let's not argue about it. But it's so complicated, just the simplest thing. Okay, how many muscles does it take to do this?
Two.
But it happens unconsciously. And how does the connection occur between me thinking and willing, I want to move my little finger, and it happening? I think, finger move, and it happens. But how does it happen? What's the connection between the mind or the thoughts and the movement of the finger?
Prana.
Huh?
Prana.
Another Bhagavad Gita level question. But what's the connection between the thinking and the prana then? This the way that everything works is so inconceivable, in fact. There are so many inconceivable connections in the way it works. So we were talking about the reactionary activities. In other words, there's clearly a powerful force, all-powerful force. And because I've been studying some science recently for preaching reasons, and the things that the scientists come up with to avoid the simple fact that there's a controller is quite astounding. And if statistically speaking, do you know what statistically speaking means? Yeah. Do you know what statistically means? Do you know? It means the, oh, how do I explain this one? Okay, someone else help me. Huh? Huh? Okay. But how are you going to explain it so that... Okay, excuse me?
Speaking with facts or...
Yeah, it's facts, but... Okay, forget it. The chances of it... Basically speaking, for this world to have arisen from chemicals, even if life existed, and they have no idea, the scientists have no idea how life actually comes from matter. No idea at all. But even if life somehow came from matter, which it can't, for this type of complexity of existence to occur is factually impossible. The probability is makes it, just statistically speaking, the probability makes it impossible. You can all let your minds wander for a little while, that's okay. It makes it impossible. So the only way they can get out of this is to say that there are practically these multiverses, these infinite number of universes. And because there's an infinite number of universes, it could happen just by chance. in one of them, and this happens to be the one. But it's really, and it, the irony of it is that the way that they describe these multiverses is it looks like they've been reading Prabhupada's books. They talk about it like clusters of universes, like foam on the ocean, which is just how it's described in the Bhagavatam and in the pictures in the first keto. It's quite funny. I mean, not funny, but it's very interesting. But yes, let's go back to what we were talking about here. So a definition of what this infinitely complex body and all these systems between the muscular system and the nervous system and the blood system and the digestive system and the oxygenating system and the skeletal system, they combine together and work in such a complex way, in a harmonious way, in a body, that it really makes it impossible that it arose just by natural selection or by chance in some way. So here's what the Bhagavatam, that he's not mentioning at this point, and at the end, I'll say what the specific reason is, but you already know what it is, I'm sure. But let's continue with this purport. When one's instrument of action is broken, the body, and cannot function, that is called death. Okay, boys, you can listen carefully again now. Again, when one gets a new instrument for action, that is called birth. This process of birth and death is going on at every moment by constant bodily change. The final change is called death, and acceptance of a new body is called birth. That is the solution to the question of birth and death, of why it occurs. Actually, the living entity has neither birth nor death. So there's the person. There's the person who is seeing through the eye. There's the person, the soul, there's me, who is acting through the body. That person, me, never dies. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Nahanyate Hanyamane Shirire, the living entity never dies, even after the death or annihilation of this material body. Now, Kapila Muni is given this very, very hard, very much this Jnana Yoga type of explanation in this chapter and the next chapter. Why? Because he wants a few things. One, he wants us to understand that we're in this particular body temporarily. And the way that Maya works, the way that illusion works is, we see the temporary as if it is eternal. We think that tomorrow will just be like today. And the changes that go on in the body are imperceptibly slow and gradual. So therefore Prabhupada said there's a constant bodily change. It's always going on. It's always going on. We're aging. From the youngest, who's the youngest? Raise your hand if you're the youngest here. Hi, Keith, you're the youngest? How old are you now? 5. Where were you 7 years ago? The old sadhu in the Himalayan mountains. Or maybe in Vrindavan, just wandering around. Oh, Radha Balava. Oh, Radha Balava. Why does one person take his birth in one place and another person in another place? very mysterious. This is the first verse in this chapter. This is by the higher arrangement of the Supreme Lord, Daivi Kamana Netrena, under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. So, 2 points. 1 point is that we are here, each and every one of us are here, but we're not going to be here in this body eternally. Although it feels like we are, even though we all know we're not, it feels like we are. Because there's something who is us, someone who doesn't change throughout all these changes of bodies. And what's your earliest memory, Gurang? What's your earliest memory? You don't know. That's an easy answer. Who? Raise your hand if you remember your earliest memory. Do you remember yesterday? So you do remember. Do you remember the day before yesterday? Well, we could save a lot of time. But if you could, what's the early? Do you remember your first day at school?
No.
You remember your first day? Okay. Okay. Do you remember anything before that?
Maybe.
Maybe. Non-committal answer. What do you remember? Do you remember something early? What's the first thing you remember, the earliest, when you were the littlest?
I remember, the last thing I remember was when I was born.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Yes.
Yeah. I think it was when I was 3 or 4 and my birthday, and we had it at this park.
You had a what?
It was my birthday, yeah. My 4th birthday, and I had it at this park.
You had a what?
Park.
At the park? Which park?
Park.
Okay, let me ask you a difficult question. Was that you?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Well, there we go. There's the proof of change of bodies, right there. You didn't change, but your body is changed. Now you're a young lady. Your mind is changed, sometimes, every day, every 5 minutes maybe, sometimes. Yes, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do this? But we don't change. This is actually astounding. Even though we all experience it every day, practically speaking, but Maya engages us, illusion engages us in such a way we don't consider that. So we all see, and I've heard Prabhupada say this recently, we all see what is the activity of the soul in the land, the realm of the temporary. What is the activity of the eternal soul, me, in the realm of the temporary, which is basically caring for the temporary, or sometimes Prabhupada would say wasting time, as the body is very slowly, 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 imperceptibly aging. But Prabhupada said, the question that we should ask is, what is the activity of the eternal soul in the realm of eternity? That's our natural place. That's home. This is an artificial place as we travel in a body from boy to youth to old age, and then to the next body, to the next, to the next. Brahmanda Brahmate. And then Konya Bhagavan Jeev. When I become fortunate, and this is described in the cause of that fortune is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And also in the final verse, or not the final verse, but one of the final verses in Muchakunda's prayers. In the 10th canto, I can't remember what chapter, but he explains that by the mercy the causeless mercy of the Lord, which follows the mercy of a devotee, then we actually become fortunate. And come in our time when we come out, when we come in contact with devotees of the Lord, who serve the Lord, who are in the mood of always serving their Lord. That's what Prabhupada was defining as what it means to be a devotee. That they've made the change from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness, from their unnatural consciousness of thinking that the body and the world is meant for my enjoyment. They've made the change, the shift, the deep internal shift at the core of their being, that my existence, I am meant for Krishna, I am part of Krishna. And I am meant for His pleasure, just like the finger being part of the body is meant to act in relationship with the whole, with the body. So when the soul being part and parcel of Krishna, not in a resentful way and not desiring, oh, I have to stop this misery of this changing, the continuous cycle of birth and death and this problem and that problem. But when he understands his relationship is with Krishna and it's natural, it's loving, then he is placed under daivim prakriti, he's placed under the spiritual energy instead of the material energy. And then he regains his natural position of ecstasy, of ecstatic consciousness in relationship with the supreme Paramananda, the supreme bliss, Krishna. So Kapila Muni is tracing and hint and showing that there's a higher power, and he's tracing the temporariness, the temporality of our being in a body. And because he wants us to know that life has its purpose, being in a human body has its purpose, a very deep purpose. And that we should use our lives wisely and not waste our lives. Where have you been, Philip? Have you been in Port Phillip?
I'm a little sick today. So far,
with your voice or your throat? You what?
I have a tonsil inflammation.
Tonsillitis. Yeah. Is it painful?
No, it's okay.
Prabhupada talks about that. You go to a hospital and you can see someone with 50,000 tubes in their arms and they can barely breathe and tubes in their nose, and you say, how are you today? So fine. Are you seeing a doctor?
No, I don't. I just took some medicine. It's getting better. Thank you.
You getting enough rest?
Yeah.
You feel happy?
Now I feel much better.
Huh?
Now I feel much better.
Okay. Now that you walked in the presence of the deities, look at them, they're so wonderful. If you feel sad, just look at the face of Lord Jagannath, Maladev Subhadra Devi. It's not possible to be sad or down if you see their beautiful face. Or Radha Balava, look. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has Krishna in with the heart of Srimati Radharani and the mood of Srimati Radharani, serving in such ecstasy. This is all the land of the eternal, the land of the eternal soul. And they so kindly come here. For we who are caught in the land of the temporary, the eternal soul caught in struggling in the land of the temporary, so we can get contact the land of the eternal. So they come in the form of the deities, the Supreme Lord. Appears in the form of the deities, in the form of, because we say they are the deities, but deity is a Latin word that means God, by the way. Dios, God. So this is God, the supreme controller of everything. but not and not limited. The materialist will say that he's limited. How could you make the unlimited be in matter? But if you say that the unlimited can't manifest through matter, you're limiting the unlimited. Did you understand what I just said? No, never mind, I'll ask the adults. If we say that the unlimited can't manifest himself through his energy, the material energy, then we are limiting the unlimited. Yes? Sorry. Grung? You remember what I just said? No. You have such a nice name. Where did you get it?
My mom and dad.
Huh?
My mom and dad.
They must love you so much to give you such a nice name. Do you look at Gauranga Mahaprabhu sometimes?
Yes.
Do you think he's beautiful?
Yeah.
Do you think he can help you? Think about that. Okay. Now I'm going to ask you a very difficult question. Does anyone remember anything about what the class today? Raise your hand. Yes. What's your name?
Avinash.
Avinash. Avinash. I know you. Avinash. Do you remember something from the class today? Yes. But if your eye isn't working, does that mean that you're not there? Are you still there?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Do you like Vrindavan? What's your favorite place in Vrindavan? That's okay. Just everyone think about your favorite place in Vrindavan. Ask you in a moment. You'll be the first person I ask. But everyone think about your... Raise your hand if you've been to Vrindavan. Everyone think of your favorite place in Vrindavan. Yes. Did you want to say? Okay. Your cousin's house. So you have to understand that Avinash speaks in very deep ways, but sometimes it's hard to understand because of Avinash. Why do you like it in your cousin's house so much? Does his mother feed you? No? Sometimes. So you're so detached. Yes? Why do you like it in your cousin's house?
Because Avinash likes to play with
you. He likes to play with you. Yeah? Do you like to play?
Yeah.
Would you like to play with Krishna?
Yes.
Who could be more fun to play with than Krishna? Do you know that one time Krishna was in the forest of Vrindavan? He was in Bandiravan. Raise your hand if you've been to Bandiravan. You've never been to Bandiravan? Why don't you take this boy to Bandiravan? There's one deity of Sudama, Sridham, there. And this first I'll tell the story, this pastime of Krishna. That Sridham and Sudham and Stoka Krishna and Bhadrasena and Krishna and Balaram were in Bandiravan. And there were so many cowherd boys, and they would take care of the calves. This is actually a cowherd, and they were taking care of the cows already. And they would play in different ways. And Krishna would play like, I'm the king, someone would be this, and they would
would divide up into different groups and play, and sometimes they would be fighting with each other and making plans, and they would just be playing. This is all they do in Vrindavan. They just play. And, but you know why? Because Krishna likes to play so much. That's all he does is play. But you have to be able to go there to play all the time. Here you have to work to get there. Here, if you want to be there, if you want to play all the time, you have to do something very nice here in this world. So one day they were playing, and Krishna went to Sridham's team, Sridham's group, and Sridham was playing as the king. And Krishna and Balaram and another one of the cowherd boys came. And they came, "Oh great king, we've come to you for something." "What do you want?" Sridham said. "What do you want from me?" We want to dance for you." So Krishna began to dance in such a wonderful way. All the boys began to play the instruments in the forest. They began to play flutes made out of leaves. And they began to play drums. And Krishna began to dance in such a wonderful way in the forest of Mandiravan, and all the other boys were watching. And then Balaram became so inspired that he was an expert. They were dancing and playing in the sweet forest of Vrindavan. And then after they stopped, Sridham said, still making believe he was playing as king, he said, "You have danced so nicely, I'll give you whatever you want. You've come to me and asked to dance, and I'll give you whatever you want." He began to pull out jewels and necklaces and things like that and give them to Krishna, because he loved so much. Everyone loves to give to Krishna, in the spiritual world too. So we're practicing giving to Krishna here so we can give to Krishna in the spiritual world. So Krishna came. Krishna replied, "I did not come here to beg gifts from you of jewels, but still I want to beg something from you." And Sridham said, "Yes, whatever you want." He said, "I want to wrestle with you." And then they immediately started wrestling, and pulling each other's hair. We wrestle more gently. But they began to play, and then the game changed, and then they played something else, and then they took lunch underneath the Bandiravat, the trees that were there, and then they herd the cows for some time, and then it was. And this way, they sometimes sit by the Yamuna River, and sometimes they go in the waters of the Yamuna River. And this way, they spend their time with Krishna, the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead. Does anyone else? So you like to play? Very good. Play with Krishna. But he's very, very, very tricky.
No.
See? She knows. He's very tricky. When I first started chanting, and you remember this, all of you boys remember this. When I first started chanting, Rupa Nuga Prabhu, who was the first, I was chanting before, but the first devotee taught me how to chant, he said that if you chant Hare Krishna, one day Krishna is going to come to you and say, and he would always do the same thing when he would say this. He would say, "I am like this." One day Krishna is going to come to you and say, "I am like this. And whatever you want, I will give you. And then Rupa Nuga, you say, when he says, whenever you want, I will give you, say, no, 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 I don't want anything from you. Don't ask him for a bicycle or whatever. Say to him, I don't want anything from you. I just want to serve you. Please give me that. That's what Prahlad Maharaj said too. When Lord Nisringadeva would say, please, please, ask me for something. He was so pleased with Prahlad Maharaj. He said, I'll give you whatever you want. And Prahlad said, I don't want anything. I just want to serve you. I'm not serving you. I've not prayed to you because I'm a baniya. It's not business. I'm not doing this to get something from you. I'm serving you because you are my Lord. So we should use our life to develop this type of a mood, the mood of a servant. Because we end up serving anyway. We want to play, but we end up serving. And in Maya, we're thinking, as soon as I finish this service, this work, then I'll be able to play. So I'll just write down on my list all the things I have to do before I can do what I want to do and play. But we find that no matter how many things we cross off the list, it somehow very mysteriously keeps growing. And then we never get around to the real purpose. We do things to get happiness. So the trick, the secret is, I'll tell you, you want me to tell you now or I'll tell you privately later? Should I tell you? The secret is that if we serve Krishna now and practice serving Krishna and put that first in our life, then Krishna will say, one day he'll come to you and say, I am like this. You have served me your whole life. Unselfishly. You've just tried to please me. I am like this. And whatever you want, I'll give you. Now, if he says that to you, you have to know what to say, okay? Say, no, I don't want anything from you. I have not served you because I'm not a baniya. I'm not a businessman. I've served you because, Krishna, I love you. And then you will get him. He will give himself to you. Atma pajanta vadanyata. Krishna will give himself to you. Okay. That's what Kapila wants to tell us. Prema pamartoma. That's what Mahaprabhu wants us. That's what Prabhupada wants. That's what Radha-Balabhav comes. So we learn to love Krishna. And we should use our life wisely in that way. Okay? Okay? You try your best? Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
We were in the lecture, we were talking about the mind.
Yes.
And also, we were saying that we have to go through this process of Krishna consciousness and sincerely, like in the last example story that we said. But in this world, we come to Krishna consciousness many times because we want some relief from troubles of mind.
Yes.
And while going through this process, we know to a certain extent, yes, this is correct, but if the mind is not happy, then what should I do?
The easiest answer. Your best friends are right here. You should go to your best friends. That's when we're in difficulty, we want to go to someone who's our best friend, who loves us, and who cares for us. And not only that, these best friends have the power to take care of us fully. I heard Prabhupada say something this morning which caused me to answer in that way. He said that if I want to be your best friend, I may give you some bad advice or something like that, and I don't have the power to actually help you. But if I say, you go to Krishna, he's actually your best friend. Suridam Savam, he's Surit, near and dear to the heart. Suridam Savabhutanam. If I say that, he's your, but you go to Krishna, then I also become your best friend. So I want to be your best friend also. So, because you are so best friends to so many devotees. So, when we're sad, and specifically in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, if you have a problem you can't solve, take it to Lord Balaram. So here, Lord Balaram is there as Nittai, there's Gauranga Mahaprabhu, there's Radha Balava, there's Jagannath Baladev Subhavacham, Balaram is there. So they're the best counselors, actually. And they can lighten our hearts, and they can fill our hearts, our minds with happiness. And then there's the holy names, too, of course. But for now, we'll just talk about their wonderful lordships. Any other, was that okay? Or did you want to add anything? Anyone else have any questions? It sounds so simple, yeah? Something complicated, because the material world is so complicated, the mind is so complicated, so how could we have such a simple answer, just go in front of the deities, what's that going to do? As soon as I walk out of the door, the same mind is going to be there. But this is the habit we really need to develop. I've seen this for myself. This is the habit that I really need to develop, is when in difficulty, take shelter of Krishna. Take shelter of Krishna. Go to Krishna. The mind will tends to tell us to go away from Krishna. But go to Krishna. Go to Krishna. If we can develop the habit of turning to Krishna, we've really used our life properly. Because we have to, otherwise we take shelter of our minds and it just goes round and round and round and round and round and round forever. And who has proved more untrustworthy than our own minds? At least I can say that. He can come. He's welcome. Yes, I'm sorry.
I have a question regarding japa. I'm sorry I missed your entire class. I just came to Melbourne today, so didn't have the opportunity to hear your class. So my question is that, there are two opinions that I've heard so far. One is that, you increase the quality of your japa and the quantity will increase automatically. You will learn to chant more. If you increase the
quality of
japa, quality as in hear more, yeah. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, a stage will come that you will yourself learn to chant more number of rounds. Whereas there is one opinion which says that you just increase the quantity up to 64, the quality will come automatically. So I was just a bit confused. I mean, what opinion should I consider for myself?
What should you personally do? Is that what you're asking me, or what's the philosophy? Are you asking me what you personally should do? What the philosophy is?
What I should be doing and what the philosophy both
are. You have to choose one. You have to choose one. Go ahead, choose one.
I mean, I was...
I know what you mean, but I'm asking you, do you want an answer for you personally? What should you personally do, or what should the general philosophy?
I mean, if I get a perspective of what the general philosophy
is. Okay, you want the general philosophy. Okay. Both. They're both true. If you chant all day long,
If you chant all day long, that'll be very, very, very good. It'll purify your heart so much. But it's not automatic. You can chant all day long. I don't know if you could chant all day long and let your mind wander. I'm not sure one could do that. But you could certainly chant 16 rounds or 32 rounds. I've seen people who wanted to, who said, I chant 64 rounds. And most of them were in front of their television. So the mind is capable of anything, practically speaking. To ruin anything spiritual, it can turn it into something mundane. Of course, we can't contaminate the holy names. But yet, we should want to. It's not automatic in the sense that all I have to do is mechanically do something. It's not automatic in that sense. There's nothing automatic. I wrote a paper once on this, but Prabhupada sometimes used the term automatic, our automatic process. If you automatically do this, if you do this, follow the process, automatically it happens. He doesn't mean it just must happen. He means it will naturally happen. So if you chant all the time, you'll naturally become attracted to Krishna. And similarly, if you hear the holy name of Krishna, you'll naturally want to chant more, but not automatically. Did I answer your question? So what do you do? But oh, now we're moving to the other one that you didn't need to know the answer to. Is that all right, or do you want to ask more about that?
Prabhuji, I had a lot of conversation with certain devotees who are into Gaudiya Vaishnava Parampara, but they are not in ISKCON.
Yeah.
And what they told me was that, you know, when you just chant 64 rounds and don't worry about the quality, because anyway you are chanting 16 rounds and there is hardly any quality.
That's awful logic. Because one reason why that's not good logic, because as soon as you mention you've heard this from other devotees who are not in ISKCON, immediately we're in the realm of politics. And I don't really want to deal in that level in the slightest bit. So maybe I won't answer your question anymore. but it's an obvious point that I even heard Prabhupada say it today. If you just let your mind wander, it's aparad. It's nam aparad. Like was I listening to you when you were talking to me? Was I listening to you? Yeah. But now talk to me.
I mean, yeah, you were listening to me.
Keep talking to me, and I'm going to completely not let my mind wander, not pay any attention to you, and make believe that I don't care about you at all.
I get the point.
Yeah. Well, how will you feel?
I will feel that, you know, I'm not being listened. I feel neglected.
And how will you feel about me? That's how you feel about you. This person's not interested in me, and therefore,
let me not speak for any further.
Let me not be with him. I've done that. People, I've noticed sometimes I'm talking to someone and their mind's somewhere else, and I stop talking in the middle of a sentence. They don't even notice. I don't want to talk to them. So Krishna is a person. Not that there is truth in that if we keep chanting, but it's not, it becomes not mechanical if we keep chanting. One time I asked Prabhupada a question like that. Not about the holy names, but, and he said, if going to that person confuses you, why do you go there? Because you can't follow this path and then follow this path. Like if you, and follow this path, and now today I feel like following this and following this person and this person and this person and this person. It's like if I'm trying to get to water and dig a well. So I dig a little bit here and I hit a little bit of rock and then say, okay, I'm stopping. Now I'm gonna dig over here. No, that becomes a little hard. Then I'll dig over here, and then dig over here, and then dig over here. You never get to the water that you want. You have to focus.
Not you have to, but it's in your own interest to focus. Okay. Oh, okay. I'll keep you till class dismissed in 3 minutes. Any last question? Yes.
So, how we spoke about, you know, if our eyes are afflicted, we can't see very clearly. When it comes to spirituality, because our eyes are not very clear, then how do we see what is spiritual and what is not? How do we see clearly?
Shastra. Shastra chakshus. And even if you see clearly, the devotees, this comes out with Mahaprabhu speaking to Srila Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami asked him some questions, Kami, etc. And then he said it was, even though you know the answer to these questions, Mahaprabhu replied, but yet it is the nature of a sadhu to get it confirmed. So he asked. That's what Mahaprabhu said. So even though we may know what we should do, for example, it is the nature of a sadhu to speak to devotees who are, we honor as more elevated than us, to get our thoughts confirmed. Even if you do see clearly. Does that answer your question? I guess so. 24, 23, 22. Quick question. Yes.
You said about we should focus on the activities of the soul. And in this ever-changing material body and birth and life and all that is changing all the time. But the soul remains eternal, so we should focus on what are the activities of the soul in that
realm. It depends on the level. How the activities of the soul are Goloka Vrindavan and the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. That's the activities of the soul. But we're not on that level, so we practice sadhana bhakti. We practice our sadhana, seriously. Okay, everyone cough at once. I get the point. It's already 9:30. It's time for the sadhana. Sadhana bhakti is not the activity of the soul. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sisi gona tai. Sisi rana balabha. Sisi dana balabha. Sisi bhanda deki ki. Jai.